doing, wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast. We are the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. Today's show is no exception. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time, and now we get to relive those moments right here on this podcast. Today, we will review the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show, which aired on 1440 WNYG in Babylon, New York, on July the 31st, 1993. It'll be a good one today. I want to remind you about our Patreon account, which I do each and every episode. I looked and we have over 500 pieces of content on the Patreon page as I record this today. All different levels get you all kinds of history, from 8mm movies to all the archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You get the podcast early. You get the video podcast early. And so much more. Patreon.com/John Arizzi. Check it out. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the history if you are part of the Patreon community. Without further ado, let's bring Marsh on. Hey. Marsh, hello. Hello, Marsh.
That's been my gag with Medusa when she brings me on. Hey-o, as low energy as possible, just because she's so high energy all the time. That's my
She is.
Bring
she
it down. Is.
I feel a little bit high energy today. I don't know what it is.
Good. Did the Mets win?
You want to fucking bring the Mets up now and put my mood sour?
I'm trying to guess what could make your mood better.
They dismantled their team this week.
Oh yeah, I did see that. That was
Six players gone, including their co-aces Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, and they paid the teams to take them. They got great prospects in return. They rebuilt their farm system. But when you pay the Houston Astros, which could be $50 million to take a player off your hands, a guy who that was going to be a Hall of Famer, and you pay the Texas Rangers $36 million to take a guy off your hands, the guy, Steve Cohen, now has a payroll that is $120 million that he owes the guys, and players that are not on the active that have been traded away, he's paying another $150 million for them. And they decided that next year is going to be more of a rebuild. So he's really just kind of concentrating now on youth and minor leagues and building up the farm system. And the Mets will be horrible the rest of the way this season. So thank you for bringing that up.
But that's such a hopeful future. You dump all the stuff and then you rebuild.
I don't got too many years left for this shit. I haven't seen a World Series champion since 1986. You know how many years ago that was? That's almost, what is that, 36 years ago without a championship.
So my grandfather was, he was from Austria, but he moved to Chicago and lived in Chicago most of his adult life. And so growing up, because that's my step family, right? So I met them when I was like 10. Cubs fans. We were even on Little Leagues. We were on the Cubs or the Padres. So we just had a history of knowing that our teams were never winning. Mm-hmm. He passed away in 2016, just a few months before they did it. Oh. And there was a moment. It was a very emotional one for us all because he was such a big Cubs fan. That as much as it hurt us that he didn't get to watch them win the series, we also took a lot of joy in the fact that the last team he ever saw did it, you know? So it was like his last team.
It was the championship year, but he didn't get a chance to see the celebration and see the actual clinch.
Yeah. So it was like my whole family's calling each other when they did it, just crying.
Yeah. That's the sad part of that because, you know, that was the legacy of the Boston Red Sox and the Cubbies for so many years. They had not won. So people had lived their entire lives without seeing a world champion.
Yeah.
You know, I got to see the two that the Mets have won, 69 and 86. But now, you know, you're getting older and I'm like, I don't know if I could, you know, I'll be there. I'm never going to give up on the team. But the rebuild is, it makes sense. The guy's a hedge fund trader. He's worth $20 billion. He knows when to, you know, sell and he knows when to buy and he knows when to cut his losses. And that's what he did. And he put all the money in the farm system. And the Mets have gotten a substantial return, like the number one prospect from the Houston Astros, and their number three prospect. So they've loaded up the farm system with young kids that are going to be ready, if not probably not next year, but 25 and 26. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Anyway.
But I do want to say that it's not completely off topic. We do have a baseball clip later on. We mentioned you tell a story about baseball in the show, but also because I just felt like talking a little bit of baseball with you. I've been listening to more and more of the Gibby show that you do with him, and I'm not a big baseball fan. I don't know all the ins and outs. It's just always been around in my life kind of peripheral wise. Mm-hmm. And that show has become one of my favorite ones to kind of listen to and unwind from all the wrestling stuff.
No kidding.
It's been really cool to kind of almost feel like I'm catching up. It's cool.
Yeah, it's a fun show to do, and you never know week to week who he's going to get as a guest. So, you know, when you get a chance to talk to Jim Palmer and Don Mattingly and some of the other legends, and I think we're going to have Jose Bautista on, who was infamous, the bat flip from the 2015 playoffs, because John is actually going up to Toronto. They're honoring Jose Bautista on, I believe it's the 14th, whatever that Saturday is, or 13th of August. So he'll be on the field as part of the celebration. So, yeah, each and every week it's fun. People dig it. It's really very popular up in Canada. And he loves to make fun of me about my Mets fandom, even though he was a member of the 86 Mets. My old roommate.
Back when they were good.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, we digress. Before we started the taping, we were talking a story about some taffy, which we won't really go into. That could be for another show.
But it's in your book.
Well, not that phrase taffy.
No.
But the story's in the book. Anyway, no. I'll leave that to your imagination. We got an interesting one today. The show is a little convoluted, a little fucked up in the editing.
It was weird.
It was when I was uploading it. You know, all of a sudden, you know, it's only one side. It's a little weird. And then I put on the second side to digitize that. It's all Bruce Jacobs sports air checks on WNYG. And I'm like, what's going on with this? So
it's the only time you sent me two parts of a thing and I had to message you to be like, are you sure this is right? Like, this is a mess. This is all of it, and this is the order.
Yeah.
The show was all over the place this week.
Yeah, it'll be a fun one to go through. And we do have a special guest that we'll be bringing on shortly, and that's someone who was there as it happened, because it happened in his business at LNS Comics 30 years ago. And that was the infamous Jake the Snake Roberts appearance, you know, the taffy man himself. And we will be talking about that entire episode that really people are still talking about to this day. So it'll be
fun. Excited to find out more about it. Cause as I was listening to the explanation you guys were giving, I was like, what is happening? So this is going to be cool.
It will be very much. So what do you want to do? You want to get into it? Do we bring Larry on now? What do we do here? You're the producer. You're the creative director.
The only thing I didn't know is you'd mentioned you were you had thought about bringing up the Vince McMahon thing.
Oh, a big story. Oh, that's right. How quickly I digress. No, I mean, a couple of things have gone on this week in the wrestling world, and I always got to follow this because I find it fascinating with this guy. Vince McMahon was served with a federal. Agents have executed a search warrant, and they have a grand jury subpoena for Vince McMahon. And from what I understand, it's about those payoffs that he did over all the years. No charges have been brought to the investigations. And McMahon also conveniently, non-conveniently, had some spinal surgery. So he is out indefinitely.
Yeah.
As per the board of directors, and the board of directors in their quarterly call to their investors would not comment on what's going on with Vince.
No, but Vince did send out an internal WWE employee little snippet that I have here if you want to hear it.
Yeah, please.
Vince McMahon says, in 2022, WWE formed a special committee to review allegations of misconduct against me. That review was concluded in November 2022 following an extensive investigation. Throughout this experience, I have always denied any intentional wrongdoing and continue to do so. I'm confident that the government's investigation will be resolved without any findings of wrongdoing. I am focused on completing the recovery process for my recent spinal surgery and on closing our transaction with Endeavor, which will create one of the preeminent global sports and entertainment brands. So it sounds a lot like he's saying, I don't know. They're doing whatever they're doing. I'm doing this.
I'm doing this for now. I'm resting. I'm going to be doing rehab for a while. So whatever happens, happens. And Vince McMahon. Nothing is going to happen to me anyway, pal.
Yeah. You saw him back in the 90s get a neck surgery right before having to go to trial so he could be looking sad and pathetic.
Oh, he was in a neck brace the entire trial.
Yeah. Do you think this is him doing it again so he can be wheeled in even more? Like the neck brace wasn't good enough? He's like just...
History repeating itself. That's all I could say.
It's insane. It's wild.
It's all right. Nothing's going to happen to him. He's Teflon.
Nothing ever does. It's insane. Oh, yeah.
That's right. let's go over this July 31st, 1993 show that was all over the place.
Let's do it. You opened up. You were back. You hadn't been on for 2 weeks because you were working on projects. You talked about bringing an LA show with AAA, yeah, joining forces with, I believe it was IWC, formed by Ron Scully.
International Wrestling Council was the company that we started. I was certainly a part of that, IWC. And that was kind of the new federation that was going to be having title matches within the AAA. Mm. So they'd be wrestling for AAA titles and also IWC titles.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So it should be good. That sounds fun. And then you do mention that Weekend of Champions is coming up. You believe it's going to be in October. I don't know that you set a specific date yet, but you did say October.
Yeah.
Probably just
because I was still trying to get a venue, which we eventually landed back at the place we did all of them at, which was the Ramada Inn at LaGuardia Airport.
Isn't that where they do the big event now? The big meeting?
They did. Now they moved the big event, I believe, to Flushing Windows on the World or something. I don't know what the fuck.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
So, that's incredible.
And a lot of F-bombs today. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, patrons.
Sorry, FCC.
General public.
That's cool. That's crazy. Because one of the things that got me back into wrestling was actually my girlfriend got me tickets to the big event, and it was at that LaGuardia thing. Knowing that that was basically a shoot-off of your event is really cool.
That was the place that we did all four of them.
That's amazing. All right, let's do this. Is how you kind of open the show. You have no Don Liable, and you go over that, but you have big breaking news that you start the show with. And you've been gone for 2 weeks, you're back, and so is the delightful reverb.
No.
So we have a lot of things that we've been working on, but of course we do want to inform you what's going on in the wrestling world. And I tell you, this week, the biggest surprise to everyone, if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, you probably already know what happened in the WWF this past Monday. Jim Cornette enters the WWF with the heavenly bodies of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He went into the TV tapings. Cornette appeared. He's also going to be the new spokesperson, mouthpiece for Yokozuna. And the Heavenly Bodies looks like they're going to take on the Steiner Brothers at SummerSlam August the 30th. So that was the biggest news, the shock of the week, the shock of the year. Cornette going to the WWF, at least for the time being. The people that I spoke to this week close to the situation told me that this working agreement right now is just leading up for SummerSlam. What happens after that still remains to be seen, but that has certainly been the biggest story in pro wrestling this week. Don Liable, our capsule reporter, our news reporter, is not here today, and that is because each and every year Don Liable, around this time, goes to the Baseball Hall of Fame for the induction ceremonies. And today, is it today, Bruce, or is it tomorrow? Well, Donnie's there preparing. He works for ESPN as a stringer freelance production assistant each and every year for the Hall of Fame. And tomorrow, Reggie Jackson is going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, number 44. And Bruce is in there gagging himself. But let me tell you a little story, Bruce, about Reggie, okay? I idolized this guy one time. In 1977, I was interning at a station on Boston, WITS, which was the Red Sox flagship station. And, of course, the Yankee rivalry with the Red Sox was just intense. And that was like Reggie's That was Reggie's first year in New York. And I was just awed by what the guy was doing all year. Of course, he had to struggle with Billy Martin on the field. And there was I was always getting into arguments with my friends up in Boston because they all hated Reggie. But I just saw this guy being flamboyant. And he reminded me of a wrestler in a way because of his personality and style and charisma, okay? So he's at batting practice. I think it was in a September series. And I asked him for an autograph. And he said, I ain't got time for that right now. But he gave me his cap. His cap, which I thought, wow, this guy's great. You know, this is like a hero of mine. And I started, you know, Reggie was like an idol of mine. Going back his last year in baseball, okay, with the Oakland, I think he finished up with Oakland. Was it Oakland or was it California? California. I had a press pass. I was working for, matter of fact, ironically, I think it was 80, what is it, 85 or 86? I don't know. It was around that time period. 88, there you go. I was doing a show called I was doing a show on baseball here at this station, and I went down to Yankee Stadium, got a press pass, and I had brought along with me a lot of different Reggie memorabilia for him to autograph for me. You know, this is his last tour around the league, and go in there and go into the locker room. It's clearing out, and there's Reggie, and I said, Reggie, you got a couple minutes for an interview? He goes, I don't have time right now. And he just looked, you know, I looked at him and I said, whoa, you must be having a bad day or something, you know. And he just looked at me and he goes, I ain't having a blanking bad day. And that, like, tore the facade. I was like, man, boy, my hero disappointed me. The reason I'm talking about Reggie Jackson, of course, Donnie is up there right now, but also segueing into our first little segment here. Sometimes your heroes don't live up to your expectations.
I should have never asked for Reggie's autograph. In a locker room, as a member of the press, that's taboo anyway.
Well, because you asked him for an interview first, and it sounded like that. I think that was going to be a secondary thing. You never.
Yeah, that would be after the interview. So, hey, Reggie, can you sign this? And I did a little misstep once before with one of my other heroes, Tom Seaver, because I used to get press passes all the time. And I used to interview a lot of ballplayers. I got a lot of those tapes still. And Seaver was traded to Cincinnati and had gotten a press pass and got into the clubhouse and he was sitting by himself and he was doing a crossword puzzle. And I went up to him and I was like, introduce myself. And he just kind of gave me a look and I was like, can I get a couple minutes with you, Tom? He goes, no, can't you see I'm doing something? This is supposed to be quiet time for me. So no. And so, yeah. You know, I was out of line, but don't, you know, when you revere somebody and even if it's your fault, and I think, you know, in the Reggie's case and even the Seaver case, it was mine. I mean, you know, you have to follow guidelines and rules, but sometimes when you meet your heroes and then it tears it away, you know, then you kind of get a different opinion of them. But fortunately for me, being the mature adult that I am, I still revere both of those gentlemen. Seaver, of course, not with us anymore. And Reggie has still always been one of my favorites.
Did you keep the hat? Even though he didn't sign
it? Yes. Yes.
That's cool. I mean, that's still a cool thing that he gave you that hat and everything, but yeah.
Yeah, it's got the number 44 on the bill inside, the 44. So it's, yeah. And I got a lot of great pictures of him back then.
And I think it's easy too, like you said, when someone you look up to, is, I mean, a little different because you got a media pass and you were able to get them, but a lot of fans and people, when they get the opportunity, they think this might be the only chance I'm in the same room with this person. And so sometimes it's easy to get lost in those moments and be like, hey, can I ask for this extra little thing? And then they hear it all the time. So they think I've had enough, where to the fan, this is the only chance in my life, you know? And so it's a delicate balance.
I was able to interview Daryl Strawberry the first weekend he was called up to the majors, and I had him sign the press guide with the date. So I still have that. It's his first That's or second cool. game in the majors anyway.
That's cool. That's awesome.
I'm a mark.
I mean, I think to be that involved in any of those things, you got to at least start that way. You got to have a love for it before you start.
Yeah, that's why I enjoy doing what I do now with the baseball podcasts and the other stuff. I'm still a mark.
Yeah, good. Now, you were disappointed by Reggie, and this was leading into a lot of fans getting disappointed by Jake the Snake.
Yeah. The LNS appearance. LNS Comics, our beloved sponsors, the longest running sponsor of the show, and
from day one.
From day one. And we do have Larry Spitz, Larry from LNS Comics, joining us from Long Island. And Larry, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Larry, how are you, man?
Good.
Are you ready to go back in time and review this clusterfuck?
You know, it was, I'll be honest, when it happened, I had no clue.
Yeah. What do you mean? I mean,
he did a great appearance. I had no clue anything was weird. But everybody else told me.
Really?
Yeah.
Or was it because you were like not right next to him? You basically got him to his table and then stepped off to the side, so you didn't have a lot of.
I was next to him, but really? You know what? I was kind of innocent. I had no clue.
So he didn't pass out or anything. He was because I wasn't there, as we'll hear when we review the tape. But I wasn't even there. Bruce was there.
He ate a full box of Mounds. Mounds candy. The candy that no one should ever eat.
You didn't have any taffy?
No taffy at the time.
You might have eaten a whole box of Laffy Taffy too, but he ate a whole box of Mounds. Who the hell eats Mounds?
Yeah, that's a rough one.
He had a sweet tooth.
I mean, a 24 box.
A box of Mounds. You figured you should rub them up, right?
How long was the appearance? An hour or two?
Probably an hour or two.
That's a lot. That's one after the other.
That's exactly what it was.
So you have, obviously there was probably a decent crowd there.
Oh, yeah, it was decent. It was definitely worthwhile.
But he wasn't cordial to the guests, and he was a little bit out of sorts. Snippy.
A little snippy.
Okay.
I think some of the mothers of some of the people who were there were a little annoyed.
Okay.
Did they complain to you in person at all, or did everyone wait to call about it later?
A little later.
A little later? Okay. Do you want to listen to the first clip, see if it doesn't jar any memories?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's do it.
Okay, and last week, I had Jake the Snake Roberts in town for several days. Long Island Bowling Proprietors Association. He missed the first day of appearances. He said he had a problem with his family. The first day he did go to the bowling centers, everything was pretty cool. But that Saturday, which was last week, we had him booked at a couple of centers, one in Farmingdale, one in Comac, and he also appeared at one of our sponsors, LNS Comics, and there's been a lot of complaints regarding that. I've gotten a lot of stuff on my answering machine, people complaining about it. There have been some letters written to some of the newsletters regarding his condition, and also our sponsors at LNS Comics were a little upset as far as the way the guy was. Now, it's very difficult for me to talk about. You know, I just have to say that this guy, Jake, is definitely one of the superstars in this business. But being overseas with him, but especially the last week or so, I just got to apologize for his behavior publicly. I'm going to do that first and foremost. I was not at the LNS appearance. Bruce, you were there. But just the reports that I got, it was not a pretty sight. And if anyone out there was offended by seeing him or didn't get what they expected, I just want to make a public apology regarding that. And I'm going to bring on our sponsor, LNS Comms, because they did want to talk to the public as well. So we're going to go over that first, and I believe we have Larry from LNS here.
Hello, John.
How you doing, Larry?
How you doing? Good morning, everybody. Well, at least this week will be a good morning. Last week I thought it was going to be a great morning until Jake the Snake showed up in his condition. Unfortunately, you know, we have no response. You know, we really had no control over his condition. As a matter of fact, he was giving us more trouble than he was giving anybody else, except for John, I would say. You know, we don't, as comics, obviously don't condone, you know, any kind of drug use or any kind of...
Well, first of all, you can't say anything regarding that, Larry, okay? Well, so let's clear that up right now, okay? Because you don't know. And I don't know. You don't,
right,
you
right.
Never see, you didn't see him digest anything.
Well,
okay, and I didn't either.
Now, the speculation from customers and everything has been running rampant all week. I just wanted to say, you know, we don't, you know, apologize, you know, for any condition that, you know, might have happened or if any situation had happened individually with any customers.
Wow.
That was the opening salvo. Yeah.
Wow. But you see, I really did not see it. The customer saw it.
Right. Well, I mean, you're the proprietor of the store, so you're doing not just there with Jake trying to control crowd. There are people that are buying stuff. So, yeah, you know, those are, the, you know, the, so your time is every, you're everywhere in the store.
Yeah. At least it was reasonable. In terms of autographs, I think everybody dealt with them because the autographs were made $5. That was it.
Oh, okay. So it was pretty cost effective for sure.
Yeah.
Do you remember if Brian from Long Beach was there or you know,
was there.
Matt Cardona?
Matt was there. As a matter of fact, Matt's mother was the one who absolutely saw that Jake was messed up.
Yeah. We did attempt to bring Matt on, and we reached out to him, and we received a really cool message back. He thought it was very cool. He was like, wow, you know, when I mentioned your name and that you were going to be coming on to talk about it, and he's been on the road. So initially he said he'd do today's show, and then he reached out just yesterday and just said that he just got back from a trip. He's not home for a while. He wants to just kind of chill. So I invited him to come back anytime he wanted to, because here's a guy that got really his probably his passion for collectibles and action figures from his purchases at LNS Comics.
Yeah, I think he started collecting by us.
Yeah.
And then now he owns a figure company. It's pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder how many things he tracks down because he remembered seeing it in your shop and never got it. You know what I mean?
I pretty much think he's found everything.
Yeah, I think he's found it all.
He's found prototypes.
Yeah. I wonder if he's got that little Hogan you told us that you still have.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah?
Right. I'm positive he has one.
That's cool. Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out, too. Like, if his mother was the first one to say anything, I wonder if she saw something or if he just remembered a specific... You know, if there was a specific instance that happened with them. Yeah, that's kind of neat that also John kind of snapped back. Let's not call it drugs. And I think it's because you were still working with him, right?
Well, yeah, I was working with him. You never know if, you know, if he's listening or a tape gets to him about a defamation. There's a lot going on. I had him headlining for me in Dallas a couple weeks later.
About 5 minutes later.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but I had my own issues with him overseas, here in the States. I mean, it was always something. He was so unpredictable with his behavior at that time in his life.
Did he disappear on you?
What's that?
Did he disappear on you?
Well, yeah, he disappeared when we were heading over to overseas. I mean, we were flying out of JFK Airport, and he disappeared for like 2 hours. Where he went into Jamaica to score some crack that he started smoking on the plane.
Wow. After the appearance, he had my partner, Steve, drive him to Wine Dance to pick up an 8-ball.
Wow. There you go. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Nobody
saw
it.
That was definite. that was no allegedly. That was the whole pool table.
Yeah.
Now, as far as, because you had mentioned that he was being more of a problem to you than the fans, to you guys. Was that like in the moment? Was he like being difficult to get sat down or situated or anything like that?
Nah, he pretty much did what he what he had to do.
Yeah.
But I think he was a little rough on, you know, doing the autographs. I think he got annoyed if people asked for multiple autographs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got annoyed if people asked him too many questions.
They should have just kept feeding him Mounds bars and he would do anything. Like,
yeah, I wish I had known. When I met him, I've met him twice, and one of the times he was very sober and he was very kind of approachable, and another time he was not in the best shape. I remember him being very short and snippy, and it was kind of...
Now I know,
bring him out.
Bars. Yep.
Well, my reunion with him in 2019, when I just started getting back into this at 80s WrestleCon in New Jersey, I saw him at a table and I was like, God, I haven't talked to this guy since the 90s, you know? So went up to his table and he just looked at me and goes, I thought you were dead.
That's the amazing thing is, with all of the wrestlers that had died, how is it that he lived? It made no sense.
Yeah. His work is not done.
No, he's got a lot more to give.
Yeah, and he's back with his wife, Cheryl, so that's a cool thing. They're really? Reunited. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That's cool.
Yep.
Do you want to take a listen to the second part of the interview?
Yes. That you guys had? Yeah, we got it. Let's hear it.
I know a lot of people did have a good time at it, though. So, you know, in some ways, you know, there were some good things. You know, a lot of people did get to see Jake the Snake. Albeit it probably wasn't... you know, the type of appearance that they might have, you know, wanted. If people go back, and anybody who came to the Johnny B. Badd appearance remembered, he was so animated. Johnny B. Badd was absolutely wonderful. He made every single person who came up feel special, which, you know, would be the feeling that I thought, you know, Jake being a professional wrestler, being around people for so many years, would probably do. Unfortunately, he let us all down, and just like John said about the Reggie Jackson story, unfortunately, sometimes our heroes do let us down.
Speaking as far as things that happen overseas, autograph sessions, the press appearances, he was there, and he's right on the money. Now, I'm going to try to get a hold of Jake and have him explain or try to explain to people here, but I talked to someone very close to him yesterday, and I said, please relay this to Jake's. And you tell him that there has been a lot of flack all week long regarding what happened. And after everything that we've been trying to do with the guy, obviously, if he's having problems of his own, it's up to him to go out and get help.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to get to the bottom of everything that happened, and hopefully I'll be speaking to the guy this week. But on behalf of this program... because I've done many autograph appearances before with many personalities, and we've had a couple of situations where people were not as I expected them to be, and one of them took place at Weekend of Champions last year, but this one was certainly something that caused me a great deal of embarrassment, and I want to apologize, and you know, I know you wanted to come on and apologize as well, so to all your customers and our listeners that did show up at that appearance last Saturday.
Yep. At least then, the other thing, at the same time, I also want to thank all the people who did show up, help showing their support to wrestling and everything. And I'm sure that we will do another kind of appearance, another kind of signing, and we'll find somebody who would, of course, be more animated, you know, and be more friendly, you know, and more customer-friendly as the case may be. You know, someone who at least is not in a rush to run out, which Jake was. There's nothing bad about saying that. He was absolutely in a rush to get out of there. He really was not very talkative with the, you know, with the people. And I'm sure, you know, I'm voicing everybody's opinion on this one. And like I said, if you want to write letters to newsletters and stuff like that, feel free. As a matter of fact, you know, I encourage it. You know, feel free, you know, talk about what you felt your opinions on Jake were, on what you saw. But at least tell them you did see him at L&S, you know, at L&S Comics, and we did try our best, you know, which we did. You know, we put a lot of work into this, and unfortunately, our work seemed to have been for naught. You know, we appreciate everybody who came down, and we appreciate all our customers who did come down, and we hope to see you all soon.
Okay. Larry, listen, I want to thank you very much and for coming on today, and we'll be talking to you this week.
John, thank you very much. I'm glad we were able to get this on and get this over with and get this behind us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And LNS has been with us since we debuted here, April 9th, 1989. And like I said, I just want to, first and foremost, today, I wanted to go over that situation.
Ah, memories.
It's a good thing. It brought up the whole Johnny B. Bad thing.
That was a good one.
That was great.
And he was there with with Rena.
His wife at the time, yeah.
Sable.
And that was sponsored by WCW.
Yeah.
The comic book.
Very cool. Yeah, we did some good things together.
The first thing they asked is, what was the name of the children's hospital? Because when they were done with us, they were going to go over there.
Yep. That's and nice. He's still doing good work, man. He's still doing good work and helping people. Good man.
So both Mark Merrill and Jake were in a hurry to get out of there, but for totally different reasons.
Okay. Mark was not in a hurry, I'll tell you.
No, but he had plans right
he's
after.
A good guy. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jake needed to get to Wyandanch.
Yeah.
Pronto. Yeah.
That's crazy, too, because I was going to ask, now you brought it up, that they talked about how much he was in a rush. He definitely was in a rush to get out of there. I was going to ask you if you knew where he was headed. Absolutely. And I was like,
eh. Wyandanch. The home of fine eight balls.
Yeah. That's what they're most famous for.
Oh, my goodness.
What else would they be famous for?
Right. Huh. I don't know.
I have not spent as much time down there as you might.
No, you're not a Wyandanch guy anymore.
It was not a place they could go driving around.
No.
Do you have any other memories of the Jake appearance or anything?
Power Twins were there, right?
The Power Twins.
Jake and Meyer were there.
Did they do anything to try and keep Jake awake and stuff?
They held him up.
Like making a Bernie's.
They probably did.
They propped him up.
They were very good. They were excellent.
Yeah, they just got to know him too from the Southeast Asia tour. So, yeah, I'm glad that they were there to keep people in line.
Yeah. They did. They were great to the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, what was good is, I mean, they needed the publicity.
Yes.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So they were very good. And they were really good.
Who else, Larry, were some of the guys that you may remember that kind of made it in the business that used to frequent LNS back then?
Well, Mick Foley used to come in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to buy Mick stuff.
Mick Foley, we did an autograph session at a convention.
Mm-hmm.
Is that did Mick Foley get to know about you guys through John?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised because if I'm loyal he was to John, to just hear that you were a long time thing doing signings that he wouldn't start showing up. Because he's also a smart businessman too.
Yeah. Did we ever talk to Larry about that time where there was kind of an imposter LNS that was starting up on Long Island?
We didn't ask Larry about it, but that came up a couple months ago.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. You came on the show 30 years ago, and there was a fake LNS comic that was, you guys weren't even going to say where it was, but
they were using
people were
your
starting
name.
To call your store and ask if it was another location.
Was it a baseball guy?
I don't know. I mean, it's 30 years ago. I can't, Larry, I can't even remember yesterday sometimes. When I put these tapes in the machine and I hear for the first time, like, you don't remember. And sometimes it jars your memory. Did we lose him?
Did we lose him? I still had another question about Amy Fisher.
Oh, did she ever come in to sign her comic book? Did she get some taffy while she was there?
Yeah.
So, Larry, are you there? There he is. Marsh had another question about Amy Fisher to you.
Oh, yeah.
We were noticing. So we noticed that, I mean, you had the exclusive Joey Buttafuoco comics. You had the exclusive Woody Allen comics.
Sex Maniacs.
The Sex Maniacs card.
We worked well with the publisher.
Okay.
The publisher was Northport.
Oh, right on Long Island.
So we were kind of the sub-distributor. So we sold a lot.
Yeah. My dad had a comic book shop in the 90s, and I remember us getting a couple of those because it was just a novelty. It was crazy that that was a thing.
Yeah.
There was that. There was the serial killer cards.
Yeah. Serial killers.
The Sex Maniacs cards that you said. Yeah. I was wondering about that because you had so many of these exclusive ones. I was wondering if you had a deal with somebody where they were making them for you or what.
Yeah. It was called First Amendment Press.
First Amendment.
So the idea was that in the New York area, they would only send to you?
No. Well, pretty much. The big distributors didn't know what it was. Mm. So we took it.
Oh.
And then we got the word out. So we were sending it all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are still up on eBay.
Yeah, they're still around.
They're still around. You'll find an Amy Fisher comic or a Sex Maniacs trading card set.
Yeah. It was insane.
Hey, listen, Larry, all I can say is like you're on cutting edge back then with the wrestling figures, with the valuation of what they were, and always with the different variations of the action figures that used to be able to obtain, the imports. I mean, all of that stuff.
Yeah, we brought in the last edition of WCW figures.
Yeah. Did you do AAA too when we started doing AAA?
Yes.
I think we talked about it on the air. It's coming up on an upcoming episode where we were trying to get a deal where you guys do some action figures on AAA.
And masks.
I was supposed to get
masks.
More,
but... Yeah.
Did you go to the Texas show to get the stuff, right?
No, I got it sent.
Okay.
But who's the promoter again?
Well, for United States AAA?
Yeah.
Ron Scholar, myself, in the beginning. Antonio Pena was the guy.
Antonio Pena was supposed to work out a deal to send up tons of stuff. But everything was manana.
That's the way it is. It's still that way. It's still that way down there.
Because I wanted to bring in like mega thousands worth.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. Well, you did some really good work, my friend, back in the day. And, you know, we still thank you for the sponsorship and all the things we did together. And it's always a pleasure to see you. And we will bring you back.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Larry, always a pleasure. And thank you for your memories.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Take care now, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Larry from LNS. Always a pleasure to see Larry. And, just great memories. I mean, just great memories.
Yeah, he's awesome. You know what I think would be funny, too? We should tweet it at Cardona. He's doing the big rubber guys now, like the LJNs. And he's doing little Major Bendies, the little ones. He made a Conrad Thompson one. It'd be great if he made a Major Bendy of Larry.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing? Cool?
Just a little Major Bendy, and he's got in his hand a little tiny LJN.
Oh, that's kind of a cool thing to approach him with.
I think it would be amazing.
We'll send him a link to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, because after all these years, if we could get them talking or even just to work together for a minute, a little Larry toy, I'd buy one in an instant.
I would too.
Yeah.
But and all the people that listen to this podcast or watch it on the YouTube channel, I mean, so many of them were listeners from back then, and they probably frequented LNS Comics if you were a Long Island person.
Yeah, do a limited run. Limited Larry.
A limited Larry.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Taffy not included.
No, not included.
That's on the Jake doll.
That's the Jake one. Comes little yellow and black. But yeah, I like it. One of my favorite things about Larry every time we talk to him is his voice is the same.
Yes.
It's such an identifiable voice. When I hear him call in on your old shows, I'm like, what a unique voice. And then when he calls in here, I'm like, still Larry. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, trendsetter back then, cutting edge, and knew more about the collectible business and the wrestling for wrestling back then when it wasn't even an industry.
He had a lot of foresight with that.
Oh yeah, big time.
The stuff he was holding on to and even talking about back then, and I don't even think he realized how many variations would come into play, especially with like the Hasbros and the different color backing cards, and the different variations. But he knew there was a value there and that there was something to some of them, and limited ones he kept. The fact he still has that Hogan from the little plastic bag, because he just knew it's one of the more expensive ones. So
right, I wish, you know, the cases that I bought for the conventions, I wish I could have held a few back unopened and kept them in my storage, but that's not the case.
Yeah, every now and again I see stuff online of things that I definitely had as a kid, and I'm all like, I didn't even want to get rid of it. It wasn't like I was like, I'm tired of this or anything like that. It's just things get lost through life, you know?
That is true. We've all had that.
Yeah.
I wish I could find my Andre the Giant hair clump.
I mean, can you imagine if you find it and it's not labeled? It's just loose. It's not even in a bag anymore. You just open up something and there's just hair in there.
All that curly Andre hair. Oh, my gorgeous George golden bobby pin.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, we keep little weird things. I think I mentioned it before. I have a Pat McAfee pencil from SmackDown, where he just threw a pencil at Corbin, and we got the guys to give it to us, and it's just neat. It's the fun little weird things.
Yes. You
know, not just t-shirt. But I digress. This was, speaking of fun and weird things, this show was absolutely that. Because you mentioned here that you're going to be going into the Don Liable archives. There was a Jerry Lawler song, and then followed by a classic interview with the Grand Wizard.
Yeah.
Which was also followed by the beginning of another interview. The audio on it's not spectacular. I didn't keep it in here. That is one of the treats for the Patreons. You get to listen to the whole thing. But I thought it was funny because you even mentioned, like, here we're going to play this song from Jerry Lawler that he probably wishes would disappear.
Yeah. It was pretty shitty, wasn't it? A pretty horrible song.
I mean, it wasn't a Billboard hit for sure.
No.
But I mean, it wasn't. It was fun. It was novelty. Like,
it was novelty. Pure novelty. And I think we have, the tape started with some of it being cut out, but
yes,
it was there. And that interview with the Wizard was really fascinating because Donnie sent me the interview, and I don't even remember. I couldn't even decipher it by trying to listen back to it, who the person interviewing him was. It was not Donnie, I don't think.
Wasn't it Greg something? Greg, wait, starts with an F.
I don't know. All Donnie, I know, says. He said he was managing Stan Stasiak and Billy Graham.
Yeah.
So I don't think that would be early 80s then, because Graham was in and out of there. You know, Graham lost the title, the Backlund, in 78. Stasiak was in and out. So I don't even know when that interview took place. I don't know if it was early 80s. I don't know if it was mid, late 70s.
Yeah.
But it was him. It was Ernie in character. It was the Grand Wizard in character.
Yeah. It was cool. He was flipping out on stuff. I wonder, too, why you started thinking about playing back some of this stuff, because that took up a good chunk of time of your show.
I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder if you were just didn't want to talk to the callers.
It was really dead air. Maybe I didn't want to talk to callers. I don't know what was going on. That was a pretty screwed up period of my life. I mean, I'm promoting. I'm, you know, not on EVD. I'm not having a good time in the wrestling business. The Jake appearance that just happened, and maybe that was another reason, because of the LNS fall back. I didn't really feel like taking calls on what happened at LNS the week before, or the bowling centers where he didn't show up on two of the appearances.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I had Medusa and Greg at some of them, and obviously the appearances didn't go well, and we lost those sponsors, and Jake didn't show up at two of them. So yeah, I was probably in like, what the hell can I play this? I don't have to take any calls today.
Yeah, there was,
and that's
no
why I was telling Bruce. I remember telling Bruce, get somebody, get a guest. Yeah. We need a guest. And he came through with Terry Funk, which was like, all right, there we go. Good stuff.
Yeah, so I mean,
the show is all over the place. It's really a psychotic show, this one.
And I know that when you started playing the Liable Archives, you started saying that this is something you wanted to start doing, playing classic stuff. And I was just wondering if there was a chance that you started being, because you're paying for the airtime.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you know what I want on.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. but you usually didn't forfeit it over to decades old audio.
Yeah.
Because you tried to stay in the now. And I was in my mind, I was like, did he just want like 15 minutes to have a smoke break in the middle of this show? Was he just that fed up with stuff?
I was, yeah, I know I was fed up too. I was so fed up. I mean, I couldn't even fathom how messed up my life would become once I started promoting as well.
Yeah. But I did think it was funny that you said Jerry Lawler probably wishes that the songs would disappear, because just a couple years ago for Christmas, I was gifted a holiday box from Lawler, and it came with, I could open up a nice little museum. It came up with so much stuff. It was ridiculous. I have 200 something autographs from him.
No
most
kidding.
Of them personalized. It was insane. I have a shirt that he wore for Raw and SmackDown that he signed and all that.
How do you get that stuff? Is like, do you know?
It was off his website.
Oh,
off his website, like he was doing Christmas packages.
No
yes.
shit.
And it was a box that was crammed. Like, it was heavy. And then you lift it up, and it was just stacks of papers. And as you're going through, you realize each is an 8x10 or a Xerox of a drawing, or just – it was just this massive archive. But in there was also buttons and pins and keychains and Christmas cards. He put in there, I keep up all year round. It was like from Michael's, a Christmas decoration of Santa that he signed the beard.
Wow.
Just nothing to do with him.
That was JerryLawler.com, I guess. I wonder if he's doing another Christmas sale this year.
I don't know. But if he does it, it's awesome. But one of the things he snuck in there was two CDs of his old music. Oh. There was Jerry Lawler, Memphis's Other King, and then there was the Slam Jam.
There it is, yeah.
Yeah, and it was these reproductions of them. Like, they say 97 on them, 94. But I ended up listening to these on my way up to, like, StarCast, I think, one year. Mm-hmm. And it was just, we're driving through the car, we're just laughing at how ridiculous this stuff is. And you're like, man, you just know that these did well in Memphis because he was just that big.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jimmy Hart's on those. It's just nuts. So it just made me laugh when I heard this. I was like, I don't think this is even on that CD. So
yeah. Wow.
But you did get, like you said, Bruce Jacobs to come through, and you begged him for a guest, and it didn't sound like you knew who or how or when.
Just get somebody quick.
Anyone. But you got Terry Funk. And the important thing about this is because you were just talking to Terry Funk in the news the last 2 weeks about how he was talking about coming into WCW to turn it all around.
Right. That's the angle that I probably told Bruce to use if he called him up. I mean, we want to talk to him about that because that was a big story. And what was going on with it? Was he going to work for WCW? Was he not?
Yeah, because you hadn't talked about it because I think it had been a couple of weeks. But at this point, we're going to play the beginning of that interview.
Okay.
I believe you tell right out that he was not going to be going there, and you asked him why.
Got it.
But the last thing you'd heard was that he was, so that makes this rather interesting.
It's a newsworthy story.
We're back with the program, and good job, Bruce. You're able to hook up someone who is a legend in the wrestling business. Of course, I'm very, very proud to be associated with this man in a little business venture that we're both affiliated with called the Real Wrestling Hotline, and there's been a lot of news in the wrestling business concerning this next individual. Former NWA World Champion, the man himself, Terry Funk, direct from the Double Cross Ranch. Terry, are you there?
Big John Arizzi, what in the world is going on?
Well, Terry, of course, we're here at the program, and I wanted to touch base with you about a couple of different big breaking stories in the wrestling world, the first of which concerns yourself. Now,
well, that's great. Tell me what it is, because I don't know if it's a big breaking story or not. There, what is it? What did I do?
Well, why don't you clear this up for us, okay? In the wrestling newsletters, there's all the grapevine had, and of course, I listen to your Real Wrestling Hotline report each and every week, and it's the most entertaining during the whole week. You had a meeting down in Atlanta, Georgia, with the officials at the WCW about possibly going in there and trying to save that company. As far as on the wrestling side of it, now, you did not take the position, from what I understand. Can you please explain to our listeners what went down, why you're not going to be helping WCW rise itself up from the ashes? What's going on?
Well, you know, you said save the company, and I really, my compassion is not for Turner Broadcasting or CNN or anything like that, or being a corporate worker, I mean, that doesn't interest me at all. What interests me is the business of professional wrestling, and I think that I think it's a wonderful business that I was born into, that I've been in practically all of my life, not actively, because it was never forced upon me by my father. He wanted me to get an education, and I did. And following my education, as I turned pro, and I loved every minute of it, and I just loved the business, and I wanted to see the business go along and survive and prosper. And now I'm beginning to wonder if it will or not, you know. And I felt like I could help the business, and I could help turn it around. And believe me, the wrestling business does need to do an about face in several different ways, because they are not giving the people what they want, nor are they taking care of the people within it, nor are they taking care of the profession itself. And I was always taught that you should take care of it. And I went down there to Atlanta, and I talked to Mr. Shaw and Mr. Dew, and had a meeting with them, and expressed some of my views, and felt like I would like to go into there and take the reins of the WCW, but evidently they didn't want me to. But I felt like I could do some wonderful things with it, but I could get above a certain point, and that was kind of the only point that I could get to. I couldn't get above to a reigning point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disapprove of the people that are in there. I don't hate them. I just think that they got themselves on their own mind. I think that if you take some of them, they are not working for wrestling. They are working for themselves. They are working for the betterment of their salaries. They are working for promotions. And they really don't care that much about the wrestling business. And that's the important fact, is that I believe in the wrestling business. I believe in the people in the business, and I want to help those people in the business maintain something that will continue on, that you as fans can enjoy.
A lot of pride in Terry.
Yeah, and he kept reiterating that he was trying to take the reins. So I think that it wasn't the idea of him wanting to be a consultant. He wanted to be the sole
booker.
Yeah. Give me the book, and that is it, and then we'll just I'm the buck stops. We're the buck stops, you know.
I would have loved to see what he could do.
Yeah, my only question, really, because I believe later on we might hear him say in a clip too, is that he does talk about how there's a lot of people who are only interested in themselves, like you said, and they're not interested in the business of it all, and that even on a local level they're not. Which made me wonder. I know he had Funk U, but was that an active working wrestling show or just a training facility?
I remember the t-shirt.
It's true too. I just know about the shirt.
So I know. I don't know if he had a university or a wrestling school. I know his brother did.
Yeah. I wonder why he didn't go in and open up even a local territory.
I don't know.
Was he involved with you in Texas?
Was he on that show? He was not on that show. No.
Okay.
He was not on that show. And I know we actually brought him to San Diego because we wanted him to be part of AAA. We wanted him to be part of that. And it was myself and Ron Scholar. We gave him an award in San Diego. And he never got involved past that. I don't know what the deal was, why he didn't do it, but we wanted him to be one of those American heels.
Yeah,
against the Mexican legends. And I was able to pull it off in Chicago in 95, bringing him in to get an award with Perro Aguayo. And then he turned on Perro Aguayo on that show and hung him from the ropes with a noose and caused a riot. And we were lucky to get out of there alive, but he would have definitely riled those fans of the AAA up if we could have got him involved, but for whatever reason it didn't happen, you know. And he was making money in Japan, and then he's getting involved with ECW, so he picked his own shots. But I know he respected what the AAA was doing, you know, based even on the appearance that he had on with Conan in the previous episode. And I certainly wish that I could bring him back on this show. I mean, we've tried and it's just not gonna work out, fortunately. Yeah, so who knows what was going on with him back then, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, it does sound like he just totally loves the business. And like you said, I was hearing him say all this stuff and thinking about that episode with Conan, and you're like, he obviously knew about AAA. He liked Conan. He mm-hmm. wanted to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what stopped him from just being like, I'm going to run my own smaller promotion. You know, just a little strange. Because it sounds like that the desire was there.
Yeah.
If he was willing to take over WCW, but only if he was running the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
it's not too many steps away from just having your own promotion.
Right. And it's probably, it could be finances, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you work and you get paid, and sometimes you get paid really well, but, you know, sometimes, especially in that era, you know, people spend as they go.
Yeah.
And he had a ranch and obligations. So unless you were like one of them big contract salaried guys for WCW or, you know, working for Vince, WWF, I mean, you'd get good paydays. But Terry was also the type of guy that worked and then he was off and then he worked and then he was, you know, called his own shots and did his own thing. And, you know, and the way he put what he put his body through. He was physically unable to sustain, like, you know, 200 dates a year.
Yeah. Then he would retire
and then come back. And retire and come back.
It was that big retirement payoff.
Yeah. I mean, the most extreme stuff, and, you know, it was with ECW. I mean, the stuff that he put his body through with ECW and Japan with Onita and the exploding matches and the matches he had with Cactus over there. My God, how do you survive?
Well, it's one of the big standouts to me. A lot of people talk about Beyond the Mat, and they talk about the puke thing and the Heyman promo.
Yeah.
And we all make jokes about the, I'd rather be in the main event and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I always think about with that when it comes up is the fact that Terry Funk goes into a doctor and he says, I don't know how you walked in here looking at these x-rays.
Yeah,
because he's all like, oh, do you think I'll be fine to wrestle? And he goes, you're not fine to walk. Yeah, he's like, well, I got a show. It's insane.
Yeah. One of a kind legend, man. That's a legend.
For sure. And I told you before, I was not very smart as a fan and I didn't know all these things. So when I saw him come in as Chainsaw Charlie, that's kind of how I first started hearing about him and learning about him. So to me, it was Chainsaw Charlie. And then I started seeing this Terry Funk stuff. I was like, who's this guy?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Chainsaw Charlie thing was the only thing that he had done. And I'm sure it wasn't his choosing. I'm sure he was told that he was going to be Chainsaw Charlie and it was a payday. That's the only thing I didn't like because he was Terry Funk. Why make him Chainsaw Charlie? Why?
You know,
it would have been more impactful if he was just Terry Funk.
I think so, too. I also wonder, though, right? So, I mean, I don't think that what Bruce always says on his show is true, that the fans just didn't know anything south of New York. That's true entirely.
Yeah.
But when you'd see the guys come from over there and then pop up, like the Ric Flairs, there was a slight disconnect that didn't quite work. So I wonder if hiding him under a mask was almost to protect the Terry Funk.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe they're just fools.
Questions to ponder.
I have four parts of the Terry Funk interview. It was kind of a lengthy one, but I cut about 6 minutes out of it. This is the second part of the interview.
And the other thing is that I want people to write. You people out there can change things. And believe me, you're the only ones, you know. Everybody gripes about the baseball players making $24-25 million for a period of a contract for maybe 3 or 4 years or whatever it might be, or maybe two or maybe one. Well, you people are at fault because how you change that is you change that by letting the baseball people know, say, hey, we're paying too much a ticket. You write them a letter. A letter's worth 1,000 words. That's the truth. And you go ahead, you write them a letter, and you boycott them. You don't buy the tickets. You don't buy the pay-per-view in wrestling. You don't buy the tickets. You barrage them with letters, and you can change things, and you will change things fast. You can go ahead, and you can bring the prices of the stadium tickets down so fast in football, basketball, baseball, or wrestling, or do what you want to. You fans are in the driving seat. Sometimes you wonder because they keep on telling you you're in the trunk, And every time you open up the trunk, they kick you back down in there. But believe me, the paying customer is the one that is the bottom line. In the wrestling business are all forms of entertainment, and sports are a form of entertainment. And you've got to remember that. You can make a difference. You get that pin out, you write Sean Dew down there in Atlanta, and you say, hey, I want the Funker in there, or I want, and not necessarily me, I want some changes in this, what they should be. And you go ahead and you complain about it, and I'll guarantee you that you can move somebody. And you can get the, you can get some momentum behind you, and you can change some things. And right now, that's the only thing that's going to change things down there. Or else you're going to be looking at the same old crap and the same old garbage. And I'm not lying to you, partners.
Well, the two guys that you met with down there...
I hope that made some sense. I kind of got off on a little tangent there.
Well, it certainly does make sense. The fans are the ultimate ones who are going to decide whether they watch a product or buy a pay-per-view or go to an arena. And WCW is averaging just, you know, less than 500 now as far as arena shows on an average attendance. The TV ratings are down. The pay-per-view buy rates are down. When you met with Shaw and Dew, did they seem concerned that this company is kind of just like going down the drain?
Well, I think that they were somewhat, how should I say it? I hate to use the same old term on it. I think they're somewhat ostriching it. It's like, you know, they were kind of skirting the subject, you know, as like, you know, I said to them, I said, your business is in trouble. And that kind of they definitely know it. I mean, they just don't want to blatantly, you know, nobody wants to blatantly come out and say, yeah, I'm doing everything wrong, or my people are doing everything wrong, and I don't blame them for that.
But they don't blatantly want to clean house either, you know? You know, the situation down there is like there needs to be a thorough house cleaning, in my opinion, anyhow.
Well, they have to have somebody in, maybe not the Funker.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, maybe somebody else, maybe not Terry Funk, but maybe somebody else. But they got to put somebody in the position to get a hold of that range. And I believe it's got to be somebody that's got true compassion for the business and the longevity of the business and for the guys within the business. And that is so very important to me that, believe me, they offered me a situation down there for a tremendous amount of money. To me, probably wouldn't be much to some people in this world, but told Terry Funk it was a lot of money. And I turned it down because I couldn't get the reins, and I wanted the reins, and I think the reins are necessary.
He wanted those reins.
Yeah. And even people have talked about some of the issues with WCW is just having too many people with too much say too often. So I could see where his thought being like one person, if it's me or not, make it one.
Yeah. Yeah, WCW always had that problem. Too many people, too many cooks.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, too, because he's talking about how the paying customers are in control. If you show up, if you do these things, they're not going to think something's wrong. They need to see the dips in the business, because they always talk about how the business is cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
Goes up and it goes down. But I think it's because art is subjective, and so storylines can be popular or not popular. Like, it can just not be hooked. It's, you know, I mean, Jeff Jarrett's talked about it. If you are doing the right thing every week, the same crowd will come out every week. Like, you can get them to come back because they filmed in the same place.
Yeah, and I watched that Dark Side of the Ring about the 2000 Bash at the Beach with Hogan and Jarrett lying down for Hogan, and the Bischoff story, the Jarrett story, the Russo story. It was kind of all over the place, you know, with Hogan, and Hogan didn't participate in the taping, but that was just a prime example of everyone having different agendas and backstabbing and fighting, and who knows the real story? Who knows what was truth? I'm sure they all had their little truths, but Jarrett said something pretty prolific, and he's like, just don't confuse them, because if you confuse the fans, they're not going to get it, and it's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And that was a show that confused the fans to no end.
I mean, I think you still see it in today's product, too. I've seen people talk about how business is, you know, not as popular as ever, but it's filling stadiums again. You know, like.
Yeah, I mean, attendance is good. The TV, yeah, the attendance is good. And look what AEW is doing at Wembley.
Yeah.
I mean, that shows, you know, 75,000 will sell out. They haven't even announced, by the time this airs, I guess they're announcing matches this week finally for that. But, I mean, here you go. I mean, it's a healthy, robust business right now. If you look at the two big promotions and even some of the independents that are doing really well in drawing.
Yeah, people are showing up. I go to a bunch of indie shows out here, too, and it wasn't that long ago that it was like 5-10 people in some of these buildings, and now I'm not getting comps anymore because they don't need to. You know what I mean? Like, now they're filling. So it's like, people are interested as long as you're doing it. So it's kind of neat that you guys are talking about it there, that, you know, by showing up, you're making a statement. So if you don't like it, don't go. And right now it feels like those shows feel like you can't not show up.
And in that era, no one was showing up. It was the attendance way down. That's why the AAA show that took place later in the month in 1993 in August opened up a shitload of eyes that you could actually turn away 8,000 people in a 17,000 capacity venue. So something is good if it's done right.
Yeah. If they're interested, they're coming out. And even people who aren't interested are coming out. If they're fans, they're keeping one eye on the product to see if they want to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, wrestling fans never stop paying attention at all, you know? But you also asked Terry Funk about Cornette showing up in WWF. That was a big deal.
That was a very big deal. A very big deal.
Was this bigger than Cornette getting into business with Jim Herd on the phone line, you think?
Absolutely. That was kind of a head turner.
Yeah.
It really was. When he showed up on Raw and Bobby Heenan went ballistic and jumped into the ring and hugged him. And, you know, there's Cornette in the WWF ring, which you didn't think you'd ever see. It was a great angle. It was great. You know, I actually watched earlier today on Twitter, there was a clip of that appearance. And when he showed up at Raw, and I was like, this was so cool. This was great.
It's insane, too. It's funny because, like, we've had so many clips of his interviews. And a lot of times we'll clip out the little part where he takes a jab at the WWE because, you know, he always would.
He always would.
He never wavered. He was never all like, look, I like what they're doing right now. He was just all like, nope, that place is a circus. That place is a cartoon. That place doesn't take it serious, and I take it serious. So for all of a sudden, popping up over there, it's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So you ask Terry Funk about it, and Terry Funk gives you a super level-headed response.
Let a guy like Jim Cornette to go down into Tennessee to form Smoky Mountain Wrestling. But the biggest story in the wrestling business this week was the appearance of Jim Cornette at a WWF television taping with the Heavenly Bodies. What is your impression and your opinion on this situation?
On Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies? Or
in the WWF, yeah.
Well, to be very honest with you, is I think it was a wise move on Cornette's part.
It's a no-lose situation for him.
Well, I am going to give you my personal opinion, and I might be right and I might be wrong here, but believe me, the Smoky Mountain Wrestling is very difficult to run and make a financial success at, and make it, because you have responsibilities. And because the population within that area, it's very difficult to do that, and he has no major towns. But you have the responsibility of making a lot of people money. Not money, but you have to make them a living.
Yeah.
And that's more important than making them money. It's whenever you have friends and you have people that you feel committed to, and you get to see that they make a dollar every week. Well, I beg to say, or I beg to differ with anybody, that Jim Cornette's getting rich down there. He's not. And he's worked his tail end off, and I think it's a smart move for him, because believe me, you can have a lot of money in the bank, and whenever you start eating on it, it can go quick. I think it's a wise decision on Cornette's part, because I think the opportunities are there. But I think what the wonderful thing is that Cornette might be able to corner some of that good talent he's got down there and get them the opportunity in WWF in the future.
Yeah, and of course,
that would be wonderful for some of those guys.
Tom Pritchard has been out there for a long time, and he's a great talent.
Jimmy Backlund.
Oh yeah, Jimmy Backlund's a super talent as well. And from what I understand from hearing reports, that Cornette really stole the show this past Monday. Now, the national
help from stealing the show. The guy's got talent.
Oh yes, he is. He's
got a wonderful. You know, I mean, he's talent. You know what I mean?
not too many out there like him.
Maybe he just brought it up to Cornette's level. He didn't steal it. He doesn't have much talent. He does. What a talented guy. And I've always said it. Talented ideas, everything else. And he's just, he's a heck of an individual. And there's a guy, see, that I was talking about earlier. There's a guy that loves his business.
Yeah.
That loves his business more than he loves the money. And I love this business more than I love the money. Believe me, I've hit a lot of home runs, ran around second base. And instead of going to third and home, as I've walked out to center field and started talking to fans, God only knows what about, but I've done that too.
Yep. Smart guy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Cornette's even said that that was one of the biggest reasons he went there was to get a little bit promotion on Smoky Mountain. And I don't remember if WWF ever paid him the way that they paid ECW. Definitely not the amount, but I don't think it was till OVW that he started having a real working relationship with them, right?
I mean, he had a long-term relationship with them, beginning with this week 30 years ago, where it started. But, from what Terry said, it was right. I mean, Cornette was promoting in these little towns in the deep South, trying to run a circuit like you did in the old days, and wrestling had a down period. Even though there were hardcore fans that loved Smoky Mountain Wrestling, it was just not... It was not able to get a lot of traction. TV was regionalized. The business was in a down period. And you couldn't make a living doing at it. And he had, you know, good money people behind him as well at the time. So he gave it his best shot and he knew what he was doing. But, you know, then you call up Uncle Vince and see what you could work out. And he became a major part of what was going on in there behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And he was Jim Cornette. I mean, you know, you talk about personalities in this business over the last 40 years. He's in the top 10.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's still very relevant now. As much as people talk about him,
relevant.
It's so funny to me, the amount of people who go out of their way to talk every week about how irrelevant he is, which just further proves that what he says matters.
He's got the most popular podcast. His two shows are listened to by everybody. Yeah. It's kind of like the old days when everyone would read The Observer.
Yeah.
And that was kind of their Bible at the time. When the world of wrestling podcasting, the Cornette Experience and the Drive Through are the must listens to in the pro wrestling podcast world. They really are, because of the entertainment value, because of Cornette, who he is, and his incredible wit, personality, humor, everything about him.
Dive. Yeah, how deep he can dive into history and the amount of opening up he'll do. Like, I even thought it was great, and it was probably throwaway for a lot of people. There was one time he saw a tag team, I think it was FTR, do the flapjack, which is a move he invented.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to explain how they did a misstep and explained how to do that maneuver safely and cleanly and all that. And I'm like, that's a breakdown you wouldn't normally get, right? Most people would just text the person or something or call them up, you know? Like, but he's like sharing that stuff, and it's really cool.
Yeah, Jim Cornette is a treasure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Terry Funk said something really interesting in here where he talked about how the world in and of itself is dog eat dog. And he said that you guys knew about that because you had seen it when the World War II soldiers were promised they'd have their jobs back and came back and didn't have jobs. And that it happened with Vietnam when people came back and they didn't have jobs. And that he thinks that Japan is so successful because the people there believe in the company and not necessarily all about number one. And he thinks that the only way that the wrestling business is going to survive if people stop obsessing with themselves and start thinking about the company. I thought that was a really neat way to equate that, you know?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have the clothes that you have for the show because it was abrupt and strange.
Well, what the hell? Let's hear it.
There's been a lot said about San Juan, pro and con, since the Bruiser Brody incident, and I think it's about time we went ahead and buried some hatchets and forgot about that. And, not about him losing his life down there, but the island of Puerto Rico wasn't responsible. I'll damn sure guarantee you that.
No, the people,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, the people of Puerto Rico had nothing to do with that. No, of course.
And I think the fans down there deserve the best of talent.
Well, I think they're going to draw a big house next weekend because, from what I understand, it's going to be a major, major show.
If you feel the same way I do on that?
Oh, I certainly do. I think you can't blame a country or you know, a province or any particular area for a tragedy that happened. You know, then everyone should have moved out of Dallas, Texas when JFK was assassinated. You know, and no one should have went back in there to do anything. But, you know, Terry, I know you're world travel. You're going back to Japan at the end of August, and we're also going to be talking to you
about... Well, you know, I'm so old. I'm so old, John. I wanted that job down there in Atlanta so bad, and I just wanted to have it with the range and everything else because then I wouldn't have to worry about my back and my knees, and I could just use my mind, which I don't know how much of that is left.
I think you got...
Poor old Terrence, he didn't get the job.
Well, you got a lot of good years ahead. And finally, closing on this note, in October we're planning our next Weekend of Champions convention. And I've already invited Greg the Hammer Valentine and his father, Johnny Valentine. And I want to extend an invitation to yourself and your brother,
that's
Dory.
Next week?
No, not, that's in October.
Oh, that's right, October, right.
Yeah, we usually do it in August, but because of the overseas touring situation, I didn't have time to put it together. So we're going to do it in October. We're going to do a live show around it. I invited Greg so far and Johnny Valentine, and I wanted to talk to yourself, invite yourself and your brother Dory for the Weekend of Champions this year. And
well, John Arizzi, anytime you're doing something, you know that I would be there, John Arizzi.
Yes, but I just have the utmost respect for you.
I'll
and,
pay my own train, plane transportation.
You got it on tape. Is this on
I'll
tape?
Go ahead. I'll okay. pay for everybody else's room. I'll give them all $100 that want to come up and see you, John Arizzi.
Okay.
That's I'll pay their way because that's what I think of you, John Arizzi.
Well, thank you, Terry. I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
All right, you guys take care, and all you fans out there, best to you. And remember the old Funkers 900 hotline. And remember John Arizzi's hotline, too. He's so good on there. Catch you all later.
Thank you, Terry. Okay, Terry Funk, and that was good. Thank you, Bruce, for setting that up. Appreciate it very, very much. And that show in Puerto Rico next week is going to be a big one. That's
That was it. That was the end of the tape.
That was it. What happened in Puerto Rico, and then you turn the tape over, and it's Bruce Jacobs talking about the Jets and the Giants and football. And that's the entire side of that tape. So I was like, I'm not going to give that to you to play.
Yeah.
And that was it. So side two was Bruce and no wrestling.
So weird. But yeah, there was no callers, there was no outro, there was no music, there was till next time. It was just mid sentence.
No taffy.
No taffy. I liked how much Terry Funk loves John Arizzi.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean he did go I couldn't get his brother for whatever the reason was, and I did try to get Johnny Valentine to be with Greg because I had the Putzkies there too, and I thought it would be a great father son type of deal. And you know, sometimes the best ideas can't be executed. But, you know, his match with Kevin Sullivan on that show in October was pretty cool, especially when you get, you know, a run-in by the original Sheik, you know, so in a little ballroom in Queens.
Yeah.
Pretty historic shit.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, that wraps up this one. It's great to have. By the way, Larry from LNS texted me. After he left tonight, and he had a few more tidbits here about some of the personalities that used to frequent LNS. Taz and Bully Ray used to come by the store often. ECW wrestlers Jimmy Snuka had come by. He bought figures of himself.
That's Dennis cool.
yeah, New Jersey promoter Dennis Caruso. Mm. And he goes, and in a lighter note, John Gotti Jr. was a frequent visitor, bought tons of figures for his boys. And Larry likes you, Marsh. She thinks you're a really good guy.
Oh, yeah? All right, good. Well, I'm going to try and get him a toy, so.
Yeah, he
he said, he doesn't even know that part yet.
If Marsh wants to talk, he can always give you a call, you know, give him a call directly or whatever.
Oh, nice.
He's impressed with you, so. Get that toy for him now. Get that done.
Yeah, I got to get that done. I still owe Sonny Blaze a phone call, too, so. So I'll be doing that soon. But yeah, that's funny. Those people who came through. I wonder if there's anyone that, because obviously he knows Matt Cardona became Matt Cardona.
Yes.
I know that right now he's thinking about all the people who came in before they were like big, and he's thinking of like more adults.
Oh yeah.
I wonder how many kids he wouldn't even know were kids that became somebody. You know.
Yep.
So I just wonder. Brian Myers was from New York too, wasn't he from Jersey?
Brian Myers.
That's Cardona's partner.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were both.
I think they both. Yeah. Because I know that last time he referred to them as the boys.
Mm-hmm.
He always likes to support the boys.
The boys.
Got yeah, because they were the boys he came through. But yeah, Larry's great. Always fun. Such a weird show. Trying to read notes.
Yeah, crazy one. And next week is going to be a little nutty, too. I mean, you know, I'm in Texas for the next episode. And
so is that a 30-minute show, then?
No,
your call-ins are usually short.
It's an hour show.
All right.
But little teaser, I'm in Texas calling in for the show. And I am taking calls because Bruce figured a way to do that. So I'm taking calls. And my mother calls in to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, that shocked me, you know, because my mom passed in 2007, you know, and just uploading a show and digitizing it. And all of a sudden it's like, and Bruce is like, hey, we have another caller. And it's, hi, it's John's mom. She's worried about me in Texas, you know.
Yeah. She's, I always get a kick when we hear your sister or something on there. So this will be cool.
Yeah, it will be. So that's something to look forward to. And hey, Marsh, you know, another good one. What are you going to say? Each show is different.
It's the most fun. Different.
It is.
Even the shows that don't seem to be about a lot or seem to be all that impactful have so many little gems and weirdnesses in them because it was just a live show with characters.
And anything can happen.
Yeah.
So I did get this in the mail this week. I'm holding up a copy of Todd is God, the book. It's really, really good.
Is it cool so far? I was going to get the Kindle version and wait until I see him in person to get a physical.
Yeah. 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 I just got it because I just want to read it. And it's not coming out on audio book for a while. I think I pre-ordered the audio book and it comes out, I think, like the fourth week of August. Mm. So as I drive up to New York, I'll probably listen to that one. And I just got the new Eddie Cranepool biography. My favorite baseball player, Eddie Cranepool. You probably don't know who that is.
Wow.
Original Met, 17 years old, signed in 1962 right out of high school. Played for the Mets from 1962 to 1979. He was my hero, and he just came out with his autobiography. So I can't wait to read that one as well.
Are you guys going to get him on?
I wish, and it's very possible, but, you know, the podcast is primarily a Blue Jays podcast. So yeah, unless it pertains, because we had the hitting coach for the Atlanta Braves on one of the last episodes. And it was good and all, but, you know, the numbers weren't anywhere near, you know, when you have a Blue Jays.
Oh.
But yeah, it's all about numbers, man.
Yeah. Huh. All right. Well, I just think when someone's doing a book, and if it's a good book, then go for it.
Hey, listen, it's a Blue Jays primarily a Blue Jays show. John,
he's got a chapter in there about the Blue Jays. Highlight it.
I mean, like if Eddie Cranepool does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not happening, but Eddie's my hero to this day when it comes to baseball players, and it was all the kids when I was growing up. Mickey Mantle was the guy, number 7 for the New York Yankees, Mickey Mantle, and my uncle just happened to take me to a Met game. Eddie Cranepool was in that game, my first game I ever went to, July 3rd, 1966. It was a doubleheader against the Pittsburgh Pirates. He got 3 hits, and he became my hero. And he wore the same number as Mickey Mantle, number 7. So I used to get made fun of because I was like idolizing a poor man's Mickey Mantle.
Hey.
Steady Eddie did have a home run in the World Series, though, in 1969. And Mets are the only team he ever played for. And I wish they would retire his number. And hopefully that'll happen. He's in the Mets Hall of Fame. But that's Eddie Cranepool, you know.
Yeah.
All Freddie right. Blassie cool. and Eddie Cranepool were my heroes growing up.
So cool.
And JFK.
Really?
I was alive when JFK was
but
president.
How many people look up to the president? It's not often.
Not anymore. Right or left. I mean, they're all fucked. They're all screwed. I mean, all of them. I don't give a shit no more. That's the thing. We're so fucked as a country. We're done.
I vote who
the president is. We're done. We're done.
I only vote based off how good I think the Saturday Night Live skits will be if that person's president.
Yeah, that's a good reason to vote. I mean, back then, the president was the president. Yeah. JFK was beloved. He was the president. And, you know, I was born when Eisenhower was president, although I remember Ike. But JFK, and I remember when JFK got killed. I remember November 22nd, 1963. I was in second grade.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, I was in Catholic school. The nuns came on the loudspeaker and announced it. And here I'm second grade. You know, you think the world is going to end. And then, you know, and the first thing I thought of was like, what is the Pope going to do about this? Because I was Catholic at the time. And then 10 minutes later, the Mother Superior came on the loudspeaker and said, our president is dead. And they dismissed the kids from school. My older sister, I was in second. She was in second, third, fourth. She was in sixth grade, I believe. And we walked home like we did every day. And it was mid-afternoon and turned down the street. And we lived in the Ridgewood section of Brooklyn. And we lived in these apartment complexes, 2 to 3 stories high. And my mother, we lived on the second or third floor. My mother's looking out the window, as people used to do back then. You just look out the window, you know. Yeah. And we were walking down the street and she saw us. And we were coming home much earlier than when school it was supposed to be let out. And she's like, what are you doing home? What? Kennedy's dead. They killed the president. What are you talking about? You're lying, you know. And then got in the house, turned on the TV, and there it was. And for the next 4 days, we sat in front of that television.
Yeah.
Never forget it. And saw Lee Harvey Oswald get shot live on television on that Sunday.
Yeah.
Traumatic. I slept under the couch for like a week.
Like,
I was scared shitless.
Wow.
But I mean, that was kind of it back then. You know, I don't want to be and I'm showing my age. But then, you know, Johnson was respected. And then even Nixon until he resigned. But the presidency was the presidency, and it doesn't mean the presidency is over. It's like it's never going to be respected again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but also JFK was a New York Catholic boy, was he not?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Massachusetts, New York, same thing.
Yeah.
It's all up there, you know. I lived in New York long
enough. My dad was not a fan.
Yeah.
My dad was not until the night that he was killed, and my dad came home from the grocery store where he operated and actually came in and had, you know, was crying.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. That's the way the public, it was like his just incredible sadness and tears. Yeah. And we all thought that, that was it, you know, what, like the world, this will never be the same. And the world has never been the same since then. Yeah. And that's why the Beatles were so successful when they came in February of 64, because America needed something to uplift them. And when the Beatles showed up in America, that made people happy again.
Well, they wanted to hold everyone's hand.
They did. She loves you. I want to hold your hand. And so anyway, let's do a podcast on history.
Yeah. We probably lost most of the listeners on the end of this show, but it's okay. Yeah. I'm an old fogey, man. I'm telling stories of life.
And I think that stuff's interesting. And I think that, I don't know, you just never know how much time you have to tell your stories. And I think that it's important to have them out there. And you lived a really spectacular life in a lot of ways during a lot of spectacular times. And for me, I'm never going to get tired of learning more about that stuff. I just wish that I had recorded more conversations with some of my grandfather and stuff, right. You know, like he told me a few stories and I can't remember the details quite right. And I was like, man, I wish I did a podcast with him. You know,
I'd advise that to anyone listening, to your elders, record them, talk to them. I did that with my dad. Well, not me personally. It was at the nursing home that he was at the end. Yeah. They did a whole video of his life and his kids. And I have that to this day.
There was a couple of times that my fiance knew that I was prodding him about stuff, and she would just secretly bring her phone out, or even my camera. My DSLR had a really sneaky little record button, and she just quietly recorded like 3 or 4 stories of his that when he passed, I put those videos up on the family YouTube. And so it means something. It's cool. So, yeah. So, I mean, anybody who didn't want to hear the last four to six minutes about your JFK story, then they're missing the point, because I think a lot of this is wrestling centric, but we're also getting to know the life and times, you know? So I think it's important.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you indulging me and then triggering that memory, but we're fucked as a country.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so sad about it. I mean, it's like it's over. It's actually two countries. We don't even have one country anymore. It's two.
Yeah, because I mean, even the idea that your dad didn't like him but cried about it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who would celebrate.
Yeah. One or the other going. Like the two top leaders of either party. Like if any one of them went.
Nobody just dislikes and disagrees. Now they hate with all their heart.
Celebration of one of them actually went.
Yeah, they actively hate him.
Yeah, I don't like hate. Hatred is not, and I don't engage in those conversations anymore. It's just, it's not even worth it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing anyone could do that's going to change a thing.
Nope.
It's predetermined like wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, it's not predetermined, but it's like, we know where we're going, and it ain't in a good place, no matter who's leading the charge. I think it's too late for us to be united again at the country. Unfortunately. But anyway, that's my editorial. That's my, what do you call my op-ed?
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was a good one. It was a weird episode. I look forward to the next one and sparking any memories of your mom and getting to know your mom as a character. I know she's not going to be on a lot by any means, but this will be a nice little.
It'll be the only appearance from her anyway.
She wasn't in any of the ones before, right? I remember.
No. This was kind of like. When I heard her voice come out of that speaker, it actually jarred me.
Yeah.
In a way. And I was like, holy shit. It's my mom.
Staring at the tape.
It's my mom. I was there. I was like, mom.
Yeah. Wow.
I can't wait. Snooki was her name.
Really?
That was her nickname. Her name was Mary, but she was given the nickname Snooki by her parents when she was a little girl.
Huh.
And she would, you know, if she liked you, she would say, call me Snooki to any friends. But if she didn't, she would just say, my friends call me Snooki. And she didn't give everybody permission to call her Snooki. So the Snooki from the Jersey Shore is not the original Snooki.
Not in your life.
No. All right, guys, that's it, everybody out there. Marsh, why don't you give us your plugs? Let us know what you're doing with Medusa and the wonderful things that are happening on your YouTube with her now, and let people know where they could find you, my good friend.
Yeah, I'm Queen of Carnage, youtube.com/Queen of Carnage, me and Medusa every week. it's been really cool digging into her career a little bit more and more, doing that. Obviously I'm here with you, and we've been having a lot more fun over in the dive bar of the IWC at Wrestling on the Rock. So come by and check it out. It's just been a lot looser. So been good.
Well, I appreciate it every week. I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you next week, Marsh. All right, everybody, that'll wrap up this edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Join our private group at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast and Radio Show. We have a public page there as well. Just go to facebook.com, John Arizzi's Matt Memories. A private group is there as well. And don't forget, subscribe to that YouTube channel. Marsh is putting up more shorts and video content. Of course, these episodes are up there as well. And that, again, is youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Please subscribe to that channel today. And if you're listening on Apple on the podcast, please, why don't you just stop by and just give it a 5-star review. Write a little review on it, because that really helps. I'd love to see some more reviews of this program on Apple. You could do that on Spotify as well, I believe. As follows, following me personally at John Arizzi on Twitter, at John Arizzi on Instagram, at John Arizzi on Thread. And if you'd like a signed and numbered copy of my book, Matt Memories, send an email to me, john@mattmemories.com, and we'd be able to get a signed and numbered copy out to you. The sister podcast that we do is Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, covering the shows I covered from the Mecca of all arenas 50 years ago. We just taped our August 27th episode, featuring Pedro Morales against Stan the Man Stasiak. The new episode is now available, the one that covered July 23rd, 1973, with Morales against George the Animal Steele, with Joe Louis as the referee. And for patrons, those films that I shot of that night are now on our Patreon account, patreon.com/John Arizzi. I have the Morales Steele match, and I also have Freddie Blassie against Victor Rivera on 8mm film on our Patreon account. So check that out, and check out the podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, wherever you get your favorite podcast. It's co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by my good friend Richie Garcia. And thank you, as always, to our producer and creative director, Marsh. And thank you to the Patreon executive producers, Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway. And for each and every one of you patrons who support helping with the production costs for this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arizzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.